This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
When we say that Muslims are supposed to seek guidance from the Quran, too often we just kind of leave it at that, and we leave, what does that actually mean? How are we supposed to figure that out? We leave that to the imagination. Okay? So it's very possible that you hear a khutbah that says we need to seek guidance from the Quran, and everybody listening to that is walking away with something else. You understand that? So I'd like to take this session to kind of dig a little deeper and understand what does that mean, actually, to try to seek guidance from the Quran? What emotional state and what attitudes do we have to have so we can actually benefit from that guidance? So the first thing I wrote here was prerequisites for receiving Quranic guidance for believers. Now, the first item there is your moral compass is still intact. If you really want to benefit from the guidance of the Quran, your moral compass needs to be intact. What does that mean? In simple language, here's what that means. Every human being, Allah has gifted them with a moral calculator inside them. Every person is a moral human being. Every human being. Allah put the ruh inside every human being, yes or no? That ruh was in the company of Allah. It was given the knowledge of the basics of the right and the wrong, and even knowledge of Allah Himself. We learned that in Surah Al-A'raf. Because every human being, doesn't matter if they're born in a Buddhist family, or they're born in an atheist agnostic family, or they're born in a Christian family or a Muslim family, it doesn't matter. All human beings are gifted with a certain basic sense of decency. The Arabic term for that, the Islamic term for that, is the fitrah. The Rasul of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam would say, "Kullu mawludin yuladu ala al-fitrah." Every human being was given or was born with the fitrah. It's a very famous hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Okay, now, having said that, what does that practically mean? Practically what that means is, even when a man is or a woman is 30, 40 years old, and they're not Muslim, even if they're not Muslim, they still have a sense of, man, that guy is getting beat up on the street, that's not right. Or these people stole money and didn't give it back, that's not correct. Or they shouldn't be insulting their coworkers that way, that isn't right. They have a sense of justice inside them. It didn't come from necessarily even their, actually you go across cultures, it's not even from the upbringing. If you go across cultures, different cultures, you'll find everybody has a sense of justice. Everybody has a problem with injustice. Everybody has respect for the truth. Everybody has a disgust for lying. Even if they may be engaged in lying once in a while themselves, if you were to ask them, do you think lying is wrong? Overwhelmingly, what are people going to say? Yeah, yeah. You know what that means? That their moral compass is still intact. There's some part of that fitrah is still alive in there. Okay. Now, I wrote on top for believers. You see that? Prerequisites for receiving Quranic guidance for believers. I put a qualification there. So it kind of raises an interesting question. How could you be a believer, a Muslim, and your moral compass is not intact? Why would I put that there? Because it's possible. It's possible that somebody's Muslim and they've lost their moral compass. They don't have a conscience anymore. It's very possible. It's actually possible that they have a lot of knowledge of the religion and they have no decency left. That's possible too. Allah talks about that problem in the Quran. On the outside a believer, on the inside something filthy, something disgusting. That does happen. Okay. So now how do you and I know that our fitrah is still intact? There are certain qualities that Allah highlights that a human being should have in the Quran that are all, they all go back to the fitrah. So I won't give you all of them, but I'll give you a handful and you could paint the rest of that picture yourself. Gratitude is a quality that a person should have if they have their fitrah intact. Now let's test that a little bit. If somebody does something nice for you, you're at the airport, you dropped your bag, somebody picked it up and handed it to you. What's at the very least, if you're half decent a human being, what are you going to do? Thank you. Do you have to be Muslim for that? No, so a sense of gratitude comes with being decent. You understand that? So gratitude is a fundamental quality of the fitrah, one of them. Okay. Thinking is a quality of the fitrah. To be able to think and process, that's a human gift that Allah has given us. Patience, kindness, these are qualities that good people have. And these are qualities that Allah highlights in the Quran or no? He does. As a matter of fact, in many cases, he highlights that Allah loves people that are grateful. Allah loves people that are patient. He wants you to become people that think. So the things Allah wants you to become, or the things that Allah loves, are actually pretty much all qualities that we were already given as part of our fitrah. They were supposed to be inside of us already. You with me so far? Okay, so if a person has a really big patience problem, or they're not grateful for anything, they just have a hard time being grateful. It's very hard for them to say thanks. It's very hard for them to be humble. Humility is another actually fundamental quality of the fitrah. And humility has many levels, but the first of them is to be able to admit your mistakes, to be able to admit you're wrong, or you're not the best, or to be able to admit someone's doing a better job than you are, right? Some people have a really hard time with that, to be able to admit their mistake. So if your fitrah is not intact, then you're going to have a hard time with the Qur'an. Now let me tell you what that means. That means that you might actually learn a lot about the Qur'an. You might learn Arabic grammar. It's just been a day for you guys, but you might learn loads of Arabic grammar. You might actually study 10 or 20 tafaseer at one time, but you still won't get guidance out of it, because fitrah isn't there. So that's, you understand that first prerequisite? Okay? So that's something very internal. Like, we have to kind of really gauge ourselves where we are to be able to benefit from this first prerequisite. The second is that you're approaching it as a seeker, not a critic. This is a really important one. Now, most books that we read, what do with them? We critique them. Any movie you watch, you'll critique. Any game you play, you'll critique. Isn't that true? As a matter of fact, people even critique athletes when they play sports. Ah, he missed that shot. Ah, he's not that good. Et cetera, et cetera. Right? So we are prone to critique things that we experience. We criticize cars that we drive. We criticize neighborhoods, cities, countries. We're prone to criticism. Now, when it comes to the Qur'an, if you're going to get guidance out of it, then you can't come to it with an attitude that I'm going to read something and it's not going to make sense to me personally, and therefore I'm in a position to criticize it. If you even have that attitude inside, if you don't say anything, if you don't complain about it, but it's in your heart, in your imagination, this doesn't make any sense to me. That attitude. If you have that attitude, you know what that means? What are the implications of that? The implications of that are you're thinking that your understanding is so superior, and according the ayah of the Qur'an, or the statement made in the Qur'an, somehow does not meet the standards of your understanding. So somehow your understanding is up here, and the Qur'an statement is down here. You're not ready for guidance. You're not ready for guidance. And I won't give you a Dars al-Qur'an today, but I'll give you just an example from the Qur'an of how Allah sets the tone right for us as students. The first ayah, after we asked Allah for guidance in the Fatiha, اِهْدِنَا الصِّرَاطَ الْمُسْتَقِيمَ, Allah in the sequence of the Qur'an put Baqarah. We'll talk about chronological sequence versus the Qur'an sequence later. But, so there's Baqarah. What's the first ayah of Surah Al-Baqarah? Huh? That's not the first ayah of Al-Baqarah. Alif, Lam, Mim. Okay, what does that mean? You don't know? So Allah gave you a book. He gave you a book so you can get guidance, so you can better your life. And you're like, okay, I'm ready to learn. All right, what's my first lesson? He says, Alif Lam Mim. What? What's the point of these letters? Why do they even, doesn't even make sense? What kind of lesson is that? Can you imagine going into a class, the first lesson you hear makes absolutely no sense to you? None. That's what you call attitude adjustment. Before you learn anything else about this book, you learn that you will not know everything. There are things that you will not be able to process. And your tendency to criticize the Quran can begin with Alif Lam Mim. You could just get hung up right there and say, "What's that alphabet? What are we? It's not even in order." You know. But Allah is putting you in the right framework. Allah knows, وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ, and you don't know. Allah knows and you don't know. Then he talks about guidance. He didn't talk about guidance first. He said Alif Lam Mim first. Because that's actually a kind of attitude check. One of the benefits of Alif Lam Mim, of the many benefits that we can think of, and there are more that only Allah knows. But one of the fundamental benefits of Alif Lam Mim is it's an attitude check. Look, we're not going to come to the Qur'an as critics. Now, there is some sub-discussions here that I want to make you aware of. And if you have a question about that, make sure you write that down so we can discuss that at the end, okay? What I want to say is sometimes people present what the Qur'an says inaccurately. I'll repeat myself. Sometimes people present what the Quran says inaccurately. So what you came to hear isn't actually the Quran, it is somebody's perception of the Quran. And at that, an inaccurate perception of the Quran. Are you okay? Is it okay for you to criticize somebody's perception of the Quran? Is that possible? Yes. Yes. So is it possible for one scholar to maybe criticize the tafsir analysis of another scholar? Is that possible? Sure. Sure. You know why that's possible? Because you're not criticizing the word of Allah. What you're criticizing is somebody's attempt to understand the word of Allah. You understand that? Which means whatever I explain to you is not the word of Allah, it is my attempt to explain the word of Allah. Is that clear? And if it is my attempt to explain the word of Allah, then my explanation is subject to what? My explanation is subject to criticism. You can say, I don't know where you got that from, I don't think that makes sense, I don't see where how the language supports this view, or the history supports this view, or other ayat or hadith support this view, I don't think that there's a real basis for this here, etc., etc. You can have a criticism for what I say, and that's perfectly fine. That's actually even encouraged. That's supposed to be there. That's the only way our understanding of the word of Allah will grow, that when we ask questions about what we're learning, you understand? So we cannot be critical of the word of Allah, but we will be critical of trying to understand the word of Allah. What is it? So our understanding is as close to the accurate as possible. Will any human being ever fully and completely understand the word of Allah? No, because our mind is limited and the wisdom of Allah in His book is unlimited. The unlimited can never fit inside the limited. So whatever we have will always be limited. It's always going to be limited. And and Allah's word is perfect, and my mind, my ability to understand and grasp is never perfect, which means whatever I explain to you, as good as it may be, it'll never be what? It'll never be perfect, which means it'll always have some problem in it. Somebody will come along later and say, well, you know, this could have been done better, or that could have been done more, or that wasn't exactly as, you know, as well explained as it could have been, etc., etc. Right? There's always going to be room for improvement. Is that clear to everybody? This is a really important line to draw. You know why? Because for some people, they don't make a line between what is Qur'an and what is tafsir. So if you don't agree with a tafsir, then you're almost a kafir because it's like you're disagreeing with Allah. It's not the case. That's not our entire history is a contradiction to that statement. Our entire history is one of open academics, transparency. There are hundreds, if not thousands upon thousands of tafsir written of every ayah of the Qur'an. Why are there so many authors necessary if there's only one thing that needed to be said? The fact that everybody engaged their mind, exhausted, learned, and then wrote their thoughts based on what they learned and said, hey, based on what I've learned, I can't find myself agreeing with this other author, so I'm going to write something else. You know, their insights. That's our history. So this is part of the right thought process, okay? Tafsir itself is not sacred. Tafsir is not sacred. Quran is sacred. Quran is sacred. And that line you always need to maintain that line. Okay, that doesn't mean we don't respect tafsir. It just means that there is room for what? Criticism. There's room for improvement. There's always going to be. Okay, now, the next point. You are willing to let go of your preconceived notions when convinced of its message, regardless of the consequences. This is a pretty hard one. That's a personal one, too. You know, this could be somebody has some ideas about what it means to be fair, or what it means to be unfair. What are the rights of men? What are the rights of women? What are the rights of husbands? And what are the rights of wives? How are you supposed to be with your parents? How are you supposed to be with your children? You have some idea of what you're supposed to be like. The Quran comes along and paints a picture. That's after you try to understand it as best as possible. It paints a picture that is kind of different from your own notions. If you really came to it for guidance, then you're ready to change your ideas because you faced the Quran. You're ready to change them. Let me give you a practical example of that before we go on, because I don't want to speak only in abstract terms. Where I come from, fantastic country, does amazing things, Pakistan. A lot of families have this notion that the husband has a right to ask the wife for money. Okay? So the husband has a right to ask the wife for her money, or he has the right to tell her to pay for the groceries herself, or to et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Or ask her parents or her brothers to pitch in for the rent or something. Jao apne bhai se mango. Go and ask your brother, go ask your mom, go ask your dad. They have good money, they have a car, why don't you ask them to give us a car, et cetera, et cetera. So now the husband is making the wife get stash out of his in-laws. You get what I'm saying? The Quran paints a picture, and the Quran describes that basically the wife has absolutely no financial obligations to the husband. None whatsoever. As a matter of fact, the only thing that gives the husband the authority of being the head of the household and the caretaker, actually the real word is caretaker of the household, قوام, بِمَا أَنفَقُوا مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ, because they spend from their money. So as a matter of fact, if you ask the wife for her money, then you are relegating your role as قوام from the house. That's a pretty big preconceived notion in an entire region of the world that would be a lot for somebody to swallow. So when they hear that and they come to understand that clearly, then chances are, no. No, no. You're wrong. Yeah, I could be wrong. You're right. What can't be wrong? The Book of Allah can't be wrong. Please explain to me what you think about this ayah. Fine, I'm wrong. I already admitted my interpretation could be wrong. I could be entirely misled. But the Book of Allah is still the Book of Allah. You're still a believer. You still believe in this ayah. So what does this ayah mean to you? Are you saying it means nothing to you? Because that would be a problem. You understand? So there are preconceived notions you and I have. And by the way, that was just an example of an un-Islamic preconceived notion. But there are other kinds of preconceived notions. Maybe you thought something is a really big part of Islam. It's a really big part of your religion. And the Quran comes along and says, actually, that's not a big part of your religion at all. That's not a priority at all. Something else is a much bigger priority. So now what was a big priority to you as part of your spiritual life is being reorganized, and Allah is telling you something else is a much bigger priority. That's hard, you know, because people get used to practicing their religion a certain way. But if you're not ready to change everything about your life, your material life, your social life, even your religious life, you're not ready to change for the sake of Allah because of His word. His word is not powerful enough for you to make changes in your life, then you're not ready for guidance. In other words, I have to be mentally prepared. I've been trying to understand the Quran for maybe 15 years. But I have to be mentally prepared that I might learn something tomorrow that will make me change my deen. Like, not my deen meaning my religion, but my the practice in my deen. Or some things I used to think about a certain way, I can no longer think about them that way. Because now I understand this ayah, or I came to understand something about it that has changed my opinion entirely. I need to be, because my understanding and my practice of my religion right now is not perfect. It's a work in progress. Which means for every student of the Quran, their religion is a work in progress. You understand that? Okay, so that's the readiness, the willingness to be able to change as we learn more. Okay, now I'm moving on to point two. Everybody good? You guys are good? Okay. What does it mean to pursue guidance? This is actually, this is based on some conversations I have had with college students and people at the masjids and other places. And I've heard some khutbahs and I sit there and I go, ah, don't say that. People say, we have to read the Quran and we have to bring every ayah of the Quran into our life and we have to put it into practice. Okay, I'm ready to put every ayah of the Quran to action. Let's start. Alif Lam Mim. What's the action? Oh, فَتَوَلَّى بِرُكْنِهِ فَقَالَ سَاحِرٌ أَوْ مَجْنُونَ. Fir'aun turned with his posse and he said, Musa is a magician. Let's put this ayah into action, yo. How do you put an ayah into action? Where did you get this idea from? Some ayat ask for action. Does every ayah ask for action? No. No. That's an oversimplification, isn't it? So we have to have a deeper look. What does it mean? What does the Quran want from you? What does it mean that I'm seeking guidance? Seeking guidance is not just seeking actions. That's an oversimplification that is very popular A lot of people make that oversimplification. That is not the case. So let's try to explore what it could mean. First and foremost, modify the way you think and thus perceive the world around you. This is actually a big one. We're going to have a conversation about that when the word ayah comes up in Surah Al-Kahf. Then I'll explain that to you in some detail. But one of the great roads to guidance in the Quran is that the Quran describes reality in ways different than you thought. So reality used to be one thing to you before the Quran, and it became something else entirely after the Quran. And you know, when you see something as valuable, you think about it a certain way. When you see something as useless, you think about it another way. Isn't that true? So the Quran changes your perceptions and changes the way you think about the things that are happening all around you. To give you a simple example of that, the Quran talks about plants coming out of the ground. But even if the Quran didn't tell you about that, you already knew plants come out of the ground. So what difference does it make when the Quran says it? When the Quran says it, he says every time you forget about Judgment Day, just remember plants come out of the ground. Whoa, wait. So now plants coming out of the ground, according to the Quran, are a reminder of what? Of Judgment Day. What could be, can any of you tell me, what could be the relationship between plants coming out of the ground and Judgment Day? Life out of death. And we're going to be underground. And we're going to be reduced to maybe something the size of a seed. You know, nothing even less. And then Allah is going to bring us out of the ground. And so if you're in doubt about resurrection, then just look at plants coming out of the ground. Now, when I think about a plant, it is now forever changed. When I think about grass outside, even though we have very little of that in Texas, it has changed. So we have lesser reminders of Akhirah here, you know. But whatever the case may be, you understand that your thoughts about something so simple have changed. So simple. You know, guidance brings different kinds of goodness. Did all the Sahaba have the same kind of goodness? No. Some Sahaba, their excellence was in spending. Others in battle. Others in learning, right? Some Sahaba had different areas of excellence. You know how Allah describes this? Allah describes this with, Allah sends rain from the sky, and different color, beautiful plants come out of the ground. Same water, same dirt. Same Quran, same human beings. But when the Quran comes inside, different kinds of goodness comes out. Just like different color flowers, different kinds of trees. Subhanallah. When you see a field of flowers in a botanical garden, now you're not thinking just about flowers. What are you thinking about? The different kinds of good that people do. Different kinds of great efforts that people make. How not all of us have to be the same to be worthy of appreciation of Allah. Subhanallah. That's what I mean by the Quran. It changes the way you perceive things. If actually, while you're driving the car and you see a field of flowers and nothing went on in your head, then you're not on your road to guidance. That's what the Quran is supposed to do. It's supposed to change the way you see the world around you. That's its job. That's why the Quran is talking about the mountain and the tree and the bird. So when you see the bird, you remember what Allah said. When you see the mountain, what did He say about the mountain? You know, and what thoughts did He want you to have when you saw a mountain? You get that? That's our road to guidance. Now, the next step. Modifying what is most important and what is least important to you. Prioritizing. يُنَبَّأُ الْإِنسَانُ يَوْمَ إِذٍ بِمَا قَدَّمَ وَأَخَّرَ. Human beings will be thoroughly informed about what was a priority to them, what He made a priority, what they put off till later. Look, every single day you make decisions about what is priority and what can wait till later. In the morning, when you're getting late for class and you haven't finished your breakfast, sometimes you say, I'll put the rest of this in the fridge. I can't be late to class. So you made a decision about what was more important than something else. You understand that? So all of our life, actually, which school should I go to? Where should I buy a house? You know, when should I get married? These are all decisions about what is more important and what is less important on a daily basis, and even our yearly and 5-year plans and life plans, etc. The Quran, one of its functions is to change in you what is the most important to what is the least important. What should take priority in your day? What should take priority in your night? What can be put off and wait? What was something that you're so obsessed with but actually has no value? And what is something that you had no attention, you were giving no attention to, but it was the most valuable? That's what the Quran is supposed to do. Change your prioritization in life. Okay? That is our road to guidance. By the way, everything I've said thus far, meaning modifying the way you think, modifying what is most important, these two things actually, they're all inside. Like these are attitudes. There's no action yet. There's no action yet. So what I'm trying to say through A and B here is, if you want and I want guidance from the Quran, what is really asked of us is a change in attitude. These are first steps from the Quran. Okay, the third, seeking strength for your heart to withstand life's tests. This is a big one. Every day we're tested. Sometimes the tests are small, sometimes the tests are big. But let's talk about big tests. What are some big tests in life? Call them out. Death is a big, death in the family, death of a loved one, death of a friend. Other tests? Money related, money problems. Sickness, illness, sure. Failure, disappointment, you know. But an exam is not a, well, that is a test. Yeah. Natural disaster, also be an exam on Friday. Family and kids can be a test. Relationships can be tests, right? We can have trouble with our parents sometimes. We can have trouble with spouses, trouble with siblings, trouble with friends. Isolation can be a test. You feel lonely. You feel like nobody understands you. You feel everybody hates you. Addiction can be a test, sure. Now, the idea here is these tests, when people are going through a hard time, what do they need? Again, call it out. Comfort, solace, support, someone to talk to, someone to vent to. You know how many people come up to me and say, I need to talk to you for 2 minutes? It's usually 2 hours. I have this thing that I can only talk to you about. No one else on the planet will understand my problem, except you, because you're on YouTube. But what in all reality, not to dismiss people's issues, people need someone to talk to. And people, more than anything else, need someone to give them hope, show them a light at the end of the tunnel, convince them that they can get through this. They are stronger than the trial that they're facing, that the, whatever they're going through, there has to be some good in it, you know? They need that, and they need somebody to say that in a loving way, in a kind way, in a comforting way, you know? And when that kind of comfort and love, it comes from someone with more authority. Like, you know, when your younger brother says that to you, like, eh. But when your grandfather says it to you, it means something more. When your dad says it to you, when your teacher says it to you, when a great scholar says it to you, it just kind of, okay. And the husband says, I've been saying that to you all this time, it didn't mean nothing. And he said the same exact thing, and all of a sudden, oh, I feel so much better. Why? Because when somebody from a position of authority comforts you, the comforting itself is authoritative. One of the roles of the Quran in the life of a believer is, I'm having trouble. I need someone to comfort me. And guess what is going to comfort you? The word of Allah is going to comfort you. You're going to open up the Quran and you're going to read something and it's going to bring you comfort exactly in regards to your trial. One of my best friends in life, in back in New York, I won't tell you his name because this recording will go up somewhere and he'll see, hey, you mentioned my name. So I'm not going to tell you his name. But he's from Bayshore, Long Island. Anyway, so he one time, like this is like maybe 12 years ago, he's like, hey, so Noman, how do we get guidance from the Quran? I need guidance from the Quran. Where do you begin? What do you look up, like an index? If you have problems with patience, read these ayat. If you have problems with health, read these ayat. What do you do? I was like, hey, try this. Next time you have a problem, just have a mushaf with you, a copy of Quran with you, and just randomly open any page and start reading. But read with the intention that you're looking for Allah to give you comfort, to give you guidance. This is guidance to the heart. Just read, see what happens. 2 weeks in a row, every night I meet him at Isha, he says, hey, yo bro, it worked again. Yo man, it worked again, it was crazy. People don't know about this, man. This is so crazy, I had this problem, and I was reading, and like third ayah I read, I was like, whoa! That's exactly what I was, that's what it's supposed to be. But Quran will not give you that if you come to it as a critic, remember? Quran would only give you that when you come to it as a seeker. Oh, it'll give you comfort. It'll become your companion. And that salah will be therapy. That salah will be, you know, you could go see a counselor and then you could go talk to Allah. And Allah will talk to you. It'll become a thing of beauty. That's really, you know, when you can learn Quran, you can internalize it, you can understand a lot of Quran. You know when you really taste Quran is when this therapy happens. And a lot of times this therapy happens in the middle of salat. Those are the most beautiful moments in a believer's life. When those moments happen, when the ayah hits you like a lightning bolt about the exact problem you were having, that's a high. I'm not like talking about the kind of highs they made legal in Colorado. I'm talking about a real high. You know? I was just in Colorado teaching a class, and I did not let those people go. I made so many jokes about that. Our iman is very high. Like, I was like, I can't believe you're still driving one lane around here. Yeah. MashaAllah. The straight path is very difficult for some people. Anyway, so now, the last one. Using A, B, and C. What does it say? Using A, B, and C what? What does it say? Tell me. Call it out. Changing your behavior. Action. Action. And putting the book into practice. Does the entire book call you to practice? What did I say? No. I'll give you, again, not classical examples from the time of the Sahaba. I'll just give you something every day. Bunch of guys from last year wanted to go play basketball. And we didn't have the hoops back in this masjid yet. So we used to drive all the way to Plano to go play basketball every once in a while. So we drive over to go play basketball, and all these guys are wearing their basketball shorts, and they're playing ball, and the adhan for Asr comes. And we're about 15 minutes before Asr, we're sitting in the masjid, everybody's wearing shorts, everybody's sweating, sweaty t-shirts, whatever. And I was like, hey guys, we got some time, let's read some Qur'an. So we open up the Mus'haf, randomly. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا خُذُوا زِينَتَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ. Those of you who believe, take precaution of dressing beautifully at every masjid. So we just read this, we didn't read more. I just closed it and said, guys, you have a change of clothes in the trunk, right? Yeah, okay, let's go change. So we all go change, and then we finished the rest of the ayah when we came back and we made salat. And then we changed again and played basketball. Okay? Now, you know what that is? That's an opportunity to bring something from Allah's word into practice. We could sit there and recite, okay, you recite it with tajweed. He's wearing his basketball shorts, sweating and reading. Start putting it into practice, dude. That's cool, it's good tajweed. Give me the i'rab. It's fi'l amr. Fa'iluhu dhamir mustatir taqdiruhu antum. Very good, but start putting it into practice. Actually, we'll see what the knowledge of Qur'an, where its role is, a little bit later. But when we come to understand the Qur'an and it gives us advice, then we don't hesitate in putting it into practice. What kinds of people have an easy time putting the Qur'an into practice? People that have met A, B, and C. What are A, B, and C again? You're working on changing the way you're thinking, you are changing your priorities, and you keep coming to the Qur'an for what? For advice. And you constantly believe the advice of Qur'an is the best thing for you. You know, when you learn to trust someone's advice, then when Allah tells you to do something, you're not going to do it because you're scared of Allah, but you're going to do it because you trust His advice. It's just good for you. That's just what it is. Even in the surah that has so many ahkam, perhaps more ahkam than any other surah, more commandments than any other surah, Surah An-Nisa. So many ahkam. What does Allah say? يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُخَفِّفَ عَنْكُمْ. Allah just wants to lighten your burden. I'm giving you these rules to make your life easy, not to make your life hard. That's what he says in the surah. It's so beautiful, you know. But that's an attitude that has to be internalized.